This is Corey Jones with the Be Ready with Safety Man podcast. Join us every week for a new podcast. Follow us everywhere podcasts are played and on YouTube, Be Ready with Safety Man. This is Corey Jones.
Hey, welcome to Safety Man Podcast. I'm Corey Jones, safetyman.co, the CEO and owner of safetyman.co, everything to keep you safe. And I'm here with my boy Anthony Eat a Hoagie on Twitter.
What's up, man?
Yo, you tell me, what do we got today?
So, we're going to get into a little bit of self-defense. We have a lawyer coming on, Brandon Foster. He's been on before.
Yes.
So he's coming on today.
And a wealth of information.
Yeah, we're going to discuss that because, I mean, this is like a topic that I think, you know, we're going to be talking about New Jersey specific. We'll talk a little more about that. But this is a topic that affects pretty much everybody that, you know, unless you live on the street, you're going to have to figure out some kind of plan in case of emergency, self-defense. You know, I know it runs through my head a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming a lot of other people, you know, it runs through their head. Hey, what if someone breaks in? What if this happens? You know, because we all have locks on our door. Well, most people do at least. And there's, you know, that thought process. Like, you want to be in a safe environment. When you go to sleep at night, you want to be able to sleep knowing that someone's not going to kick in your front door, right?
Yeah, well, some of the things I want to know, like, as a firearm instructor, I get asked this question over and over and over again is, well, you know, if somebody's breaking in my car, like, can I go out and point my gun at them? Or, you know, if somebody's in my house and they're running away, can I shoot them and bring them back in the house? I'm like, well, this isn't 1950. I don't know that that's going to work anymore. I mean, all cops watch Dexter, so they kind of understand about blood spray and all that kind of stuff. But I want to get it from the actual attorney, you know, not just from a cop who wears a bulletproof vest and says safety man, a retired cop that says safety man. I want to get it from an actual attorney who's trained and understands the law. And there's going to be some key words that he's going to bring up that are going to really be pivotal in how we're making our decisions and how those decisions are going to be judged both criminally and potentially civilly and socially. Because there's three courts nowadays. There's a criminal court, that civil court, and there's that court of public opinion.
Yes.
And I know when I train my clients, I try to give them tactics that can make them win all three of those.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, especially social media nowadays. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're judged before you even walk out your front door or walk into a courtroom. So that is, you know, that is something that, and it's going to be on the social media front lines when something like this happens.
Yeah.
And that's something they have to be mentally prepared for if that's something that happens to you. But all right, we're gonna tune in now to Brandon and we'll bring him on and see what he has to say, Mr. Foster. So hold on one second, we'll get him over here. All right, so Mr. Foster is here.
Yeah,
we are live.
Welcome
He's back.
It's COVID, we can fist bump, right?
Okay. COVID.
So first off, you want to give your introduction, who you are again, and tell them that you're not their lawyer. So
gotta give you that obligatory disclaimer. So my name is Brandon Foster. I am a licensed attorney in the state of New Jersey and only the state of New Jersey. Also, everything we're going to talk about here is a lot of hypotheticals. I'm not your attorney unless we sign some kind of engagement letter and fee agreement, but a lot of this is just for discussion rather than actual tangible legal advice.
I like the way you slip fee agreement in there, right?
Yeah.
Like I wasn't going to hear that. You
know? We don't do anything for free.
No pro bono
around here.
So apparently what we're here to talk about, Brandon, is use of force. Most of our podcasts
self-defense specifically.
Yeah, self-defense specifically in use of force. I have law enforcement experience. I'm a use of force instructor. I've testified for use of force. Things are changing. It's 2022 and a lot of things are changing and there's things on the horizon that may change more and you have to be up on that.
Absolutely.
I just got to get this out of you. What's the number one question that you get clients that are asking you in reference to use of force?
Usually it's the, and it always, it comes up in law school too, is can I, if the guy breaks in my house and he runs out, can I shoot him in the back, drag him in and be like, I got him in the house? No.
You
can't do that. That is, you will be held liable at that point.
Yeah, because forensics now is a little bit better than it was in 1950. Probably, when somebody's grandfather
did that. The amazingness of technology we have today, collection of evidence, collection of different samples and things like that. Like CSI is not lying, folks. Like they do have the ability to find everything.
Yeah. And your Ring video doorbell is probably not going to be your friend at that point.
Right,
if you do
that. Right. Ring doorbells catch a lot more than a lot of people seem to think that they do.
Yeah. Constantly seeing videos on Ring doorbells now is all you see them on YouTube and people posting stuff all the time now going on Ring doorbells.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There was that terrible shootout between those two people got in an argument over shoveling snow.
I saw that.
Remember that? And yeah. That was all captured from just someone's outdoor security camera.
Oh, yeah.
That was basically we watched an assassination happen.
That was bad.
You know, so that brings me to a good point. So use of force for self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of give me a fact pattern that we would kind of use to judge that.
The one thing about self-defense is that you'll hear a lot of people talk about it's a loophole. Self-defense, along with a lot of other terms in legal terms, are not necessarily loopholes. Self-defense is actually an affirmative defense that has elements that have to be proven.
Okay.
Because at that point, if you're claiming self-defense, you are actually the defending yourself in a court of law to say, I had the right to do what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you have to prove you had the right to do what you did. So you have elements you have to prove in a court of law to say, to justify your claim of self-defense. The first element being that the threat was immediate and that you had to handle it. The second element being that act that you were trying to deal with was an unlawful act.
Okay.
For example, like if a police officer is trying to arrest you, you can't claim self-defense by fighting the cop. Real legal
people
advice.
People do, but
that's never going to work for you.
Can you say that again? Because I don't think the internet is aware of that.
In today's day and age, I think some people are confused in that fighting a cop, because you disagree with why the cop is arresting you, that's not your time to try to deal with that.
Right.
Your time to deal with that is in front of a jury of your peers or a judge or in front of the prosecutor. Fighting the cop because you don't agree with why you're being arrested is not a claim of self-defense.
And actually is going to make it worse, right?
It's going to make it exponentially worse. There's going to be a whole bunch of charges that are going to get piled on top of that. So there's two elements. And then the third element is that the force has to be reasonable and roughly equal. Like if you're getting in a fist fight,
and I pull out like a nuclear bomb,
I can't I can't go get my car and then run you over. Like that is not justifiable force right there. You have now escalated the force and you lose your claim of self-defense at that point.
Right. Because now I just committed a homicide.
I've committed a homicide. I've committed a vehicular
manslaughter.
Yeah. A number of things that could possibly happen. Assault.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what you're kind of saying is that everything I'm doing has to be reasonable?
Reasonable. That is really the key word when you want to talk about self-defense is the reasonableness standard. Now, you'd think because we have a word and we have a term that we're going to try to analyze, there'd be a very clear definition of it. The problem is, and much like the rest of the law, there's not a clear definition of it. And when you go into a court of law and you're trying to say, hey, what I did was reasonable, you have to look at the reasonable person standard. Meaning we're going to take a lot, you're going to allow the jury to take a lot into account. And that's why you're going to have the defense and the prosecution trying to prove what you did was not reasonable if you're the defendant. Some of the things you can take into account is the circumstances that you're in. You know, what's going on around that situation right then and there. Also, some of the things that I've undergone. Like, what have I undergone that might have made me view the situation differently? Let's say I'm on a subway and I've been mugged 4 times in a Philadelphia subway.
Mm-hmm.
And I see there's a lot of septa muggings these days, you know? Yeah. Does that play into me saying as a reasonable person that's been mugged 4 times, like, did I think what was about to happen or did I think that what was going on was a threat versus someone who has not been mugged?
And they couldn't pick up those pre-incident indicators.
Right. So, and that's why the reasonableness standard is going to be up to the jury and to say, do we believe what he did was reasonable or do we not believe what he did was reasonable? You know, if I'm a Navy SEAL and I'm sitting on a SEPTA train, I'm probably not worried about a bunch of people coming my way or causing chaos. But if I'm someone who's been mugged 4 times on the SEPTA subway, the reasonable standard is going to change based on the totality of the circumstances.
Ah, there's that other word. So now we have reasonable and we have totality of circumstances, that other phrase. So you're kind of alluding to all the circumstances we have to be aware of.
All of them.
Let's just pick me for example. 27-year law enforcement veteran, a lot of training experience, mixed martial arts, firearms, situational awareness. We just did a podcast on this, so we're assuming that I'm up and I'm looking around. Does the law expect me to behave differently than it would expect a 16-year-old woman who's never even played hide and seek before in her life?
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to be treated differently based on your life circumstances. The aggregation of everything about you and the circumstances that you're currently facing, you're obviously going to deal with something a lot different than that 60-year-old woman. You know, I'm a military veteran. I've been to Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm not necessarily as worried about things as, you know, my wife may be.
Right.
You know, so the reasonableness is going to shift one way or another. One of the issues that you got to deal with reasonableness, though, is that we also still have to apply a reasonableness standard. We have to find what the court is eventually going to find as reasonable. Either we're going to, because if they don't, they're either going to treat the person unfairly because they're going to over say, well, he has a ton of training. He has this. He has that. Mm-hmm. There's no way he should have been afraid.
He had that awesome vest on.
He had that amazing vest that we just saw running around the subway. So, you know, that's the court has to weigh a lot of that reasonableness, and that's why it has to look at everything surrounding the circumstances, including your background.
Okay, and so tell me about inside the home, a homeowner. So I get a lot of my clients that I'm training in firearms are first-time gun owners, and their biggest fear in New Jersey, since there's no concealed carry outside the home in New Jersey, is someone breaking in their home. I'll just leave it there.
Right.
Do we have to infer intention of that person breaking in the home?
So in your home, there's two things. When the intruder is in your home, the situation kind of changes a little bit. One, you do not have the obligation to retreat in your own home unless you are the aggressor in your home. Ah. If you become the aggressor against somebody in your home, if you want to claim self-defense, you then have to retreat and give them the opportunity to continue the attack, where then you have to defend yourself.
Okay.
That is the one time where you're in your own home and you can say you have the duty to retreat. Otherwise, in your own home, you do not have the duty to retreat. Castle Doctrine.
Okay.
I think everybody's heard that a number of times.
Definitely heard it. What is it? What actually is that?
Castle Doctrine means you have the right to protect and feel safe in your own home.
Regardless of anything.
Regardless of, you know, except for some very, 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 very small circumstances. But not only yourself, but of third parties, other people in your home. You're allowed to protect them just as you would protect yourself in your own home. Okay. So someone being in your home, an intruder being in your home, this isn't just like, you know, your friend down the street is in your home and you're like, oh, and you're an intruder. Like, you know, you welcome them in at a certain point versus someone who's like kicked the front door in.
Yeah, like the pizza guy's like, hey, anyone here? I'm trying to... And then you just shoot him. Yeah, like, you can't just, you know...
Not capping the pizza guy because you didn't hear the doorbell and the door was unlocked.
Well, he didn't follow the COVID rules, man. He's supposed to sit on the steps and run.
Yeah. One of the other interesting things about New Jersey is that sometimes you'll hear people say you have to give them the opportunity to... You have to give the intruder the opportunity to leave.
Okay.
Sort kind of thing. You are supposed to view the circumstance and say, I feel that this person is a threat. Mm-hmm. And again, that's the totality of the circumstances. What are they doing in your home? Why are they there? Is this a drunk kid who walked in the wrong house versus a guy who has decided he is going to take your stuff and hurt you and your family?
Yeah, I mean, and again, it depends, you know, like you said, the total circumstances, because if you live in a college town where there's drunk kids walking around every Friday night, and someone's banging on your door and it's a college, you know, like that would be a lot different than if you live in a neighborhood where you have no neighbors and all of a sudden someone's trying to bang on your door and you don't have a neighbor for miles, right?
Right. Like, different circumstances.
Yes.
Right.
So you've now judged the fact that you think this person is an intruder. You sort of have to give them the opportunity to say, get out, surrender, drop whatever weapon you have and vacate the premises. The only time you don't have to give them that warning is if you feel that if you give them that warning, you've now given them too much time to get to you.
Okay.
That's the only time you don't have to give them that warning. So that goes back to the question of if the intruder has vacated my house, can I shoot them back and drag them in? No. Because they have retreated at that point.
They've already
retreated. You are now the aggressor if they've retreated from your house.
Okay.
But again, one thing is you can protect third parties in your house as well.
Of course.
You treat third parties just as you would treat yourself. And that's the same outside the house. If you're walking down the street and you see some dude just getting his face beat in the street, you can protect that guy with the same force as if you would protect yourself, because you've identified the threat is immediate. It's an unlawful act, and you can use proportional force against that threat.
And we would be talking about physical, potentially mechanical force or some sort of spray or something. I can't run back to my house, go get my gun, and then run back around the block and go shoot.
No, because that threat's now not immediate.
Okay.
You've now vacated. Okay. And that's an important thing too about self-defense inside, particularly outside the home, is that if you have retreated, you cannot then re-engage and still claim self-defense.
Okay. And I hear that term thrown out a lot. People just automatically go, oh, it's self-defense. But then you watch the video and it is. They go to their car, then they come back and they square up with the dude and like, oh, I was self-defense. Like, now you could have got in your car and left, but you decide to come back. Then you re-engage and then you body basically square up to each other and you got pummeled because of it. Now, that's not really self-defense. People need to understand that. Just because someone, if you can get away, you have to try. Like I said, except if you're in your residence, obviously.
Yeah.
And what's after that comma? If you can escape in complete safety, right?
Right.
In complete safety, not possible safety, not... it's a 50-50.
Right.
It's kind of like you got to be able to get out in complete safety.
Yeah, right? If you can get to complete safety, there was old case law where a man was being chased by a mob. Mm-hmm. He got completely away from the mob. He went back to his home, got a shotgun, went back to the mob, and just started capping people in the mob.
Right.
Tried to claim self-defense, and the court said, no, you had reached complete safety. You fulfilled the obligation to retreat. You eliminated the threat at that point, and now you became the aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can no longer claim self-defense.
Yeah, it seems like we're hitting a pretty good theme here. It's kind of like force should be a last resort, right? Deadly force.
Deadly force should be your last resort. And you can only use deadly force in certain circumstances. Mm-hmm. You cannot just use deadly force to protect everything.
So not my Xbox? I mean, I just bought a pretty expensive Xbox for my kid for Christmas. And if somebody's got that in a suitcase or a pillowcase and are about ready to leave, I can't shoot them to protect that expensive Xbox?
No. Sorry, no.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
So you can use deadly force to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You can use deadly force to protect another person if their force is proportional. And deadly force can only be used if you feel that you are either going to use your life, you lose a limb, or be so severely mangled that your life will be significantly altered for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And a third party. You can protect the third party in the same way. So protect yourself, a third party, your home. You can also use deadly force in situations where to protect personal property in terms against like arson, robbery, where you think that their threat could cause you deadly. Mm-hmm. They could use deadly force against you, and burglary. You cannot use deadly force to protect things like cars, personal property. You can use force to protect them and to stop that crime from happening, but you cannot use deadly force.
Okay.
Like if we all of a sudden hear Anthony's car alarm going off and we run out there and one of you brings a gun with you and shoots the guy, you're not claiming self-defense at that point.
Right.
But if the three of us went out there and roughed the guy up and he ran away and we stopped that crime from happening, we can claim self-defense at that point. I mean, maybe if 3-on-1 might be
a problem. That might be a little excessive. I was like, oh, that's a little excessive.
That might be a problem.
We'll do a tag team. We'll do a tag team rules. Tag team rules.
Yes, yeah. Your Honor. It was one at a time.
One at a time. When I got winded, you got in.
The court record says you guys did tag team? Yes, Your Honor. We did. Sorry. WWE Friday Night SmackDown.
There you go.
The thing with self-defense is that you are proving self-defense. It is incumbent upon you to prove it. It is not incumbent upon the person that you committed the either deadly force or the self-defense act against to prove mm-hmm. anything. It's incumbent upon you to prove that self-defense. You have to prove the elements. That's why I say this is an affirmative defense mm-hmm. versus a legal loophole that we're just trying to get out of.
So let's take a homeowner. So say we have a homeowner, they've had to use deadly force.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is hypothetical, and I know we could get into the weeds. We could probably burn down the camera battery probably. Trying to discuss this, right?
Right.
But just to say, a homeowner had to use deadly force to protect him and his wife from an intruder who was inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the do's and don'ts, the big kind of guiding do's or don'ts that you want him or her to follow as far as talking to the police, touching evidence, dealing with their firearms and things like that?
So, and if I had a client that I was trying to advise and we're talking about a situation, I would say, one, don't touch the evidence. Don't touch the body. Don't move it around. Don't take pictures with your phone. There is an entire unit in the police department that will come in and handle that for you. One, if you're messing with the evidence in the crime scene, you are now potentially committing a crime in
tampering with the evidence
yeah. in the crime scene. When the threat is terminated and you are certain the threat is terminated, put down the firearm, either take the magazine out, unload it, whatever. Prove that you are now not a threat to the police officers coming in. You know, and I know when I was in Afghanistan, there was a lot of jumpy moments where, you know, I was carrying a weapon in Afghanistan, and you don't want the situation to be that they think you're the threat.
Right.
Police officers are coming in knowing that a firearm was discharged or a weapon of some sort was used, and it's their job to protect themselves right. as much as it is to protect you. And until they figure out what happened, nobody has any idea who the threat is at that point, except for there's a dead guy on the ground.
Right.
Yeah.
So don't mess with the evidence. Don't take a bunch of pictures on your phone because guess what? Your phone is now a part of discovery because you took a bunch of pictures of it. And just be honest. Be honest about what happened. Be very direct about what happened. Mm-hmm. And try to prove the elements.
If you're my attorney and I'm the client and I shot somebody in my house, my second phone call after 911 should be to you.
Probably.
And yeah. say, get over here.
Yeah. because here's the thing. Here's an interesting thing is that I know you guys are cops, but cops can play some tricky games.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily have to tell you that your attorney is sitting in the waiting room. Once I get there, I can demand to see my client, and that's the point where the cops can't continue the interrogation or the interview without the attorney present. But until the client says, I want to speak to my attorney, at that point, conversations are going to stop. The cops may try to play some games here and there. I've read some interesting case law about cops playing some interesting games about putting a colander on somebody's head and attaching wires to it and pretending like they were lie detecting them. That actually passed the muster.
No way. And I can't believe that would happen.
Criminal court. But demand to see your attorney. Demand to see your attorney. Mm-hmm. Wait till your attorney gets there. Look, I know the cops are just trying to do their job, but you also don't want to incriminate yourself by saying something.
Right.
Just wait till your attorney gets there. Tell your attorney the story. Then, as an attorney-client team, then deal with the police in the interview and the questioning, et cetera, because your attorney will be there to say, don't answer that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Because you're going to be excited, right? You're going to be adrenaline.
Yeah.
And from all my training, from my understanding, I know you've gotten this both from lawyer training and in the military, is that perceptual narrowing, right? Mm-hmm. There may be things that you perceive but don't know that you perceive them yet, that you saw but you don't remember, you heard that you don't remember.
Let the adrenaline come down a little bit.
Right.
You know, and that might take a while. I mean, I remember there was a time in Afghanistan where some bombs went off, and I literally took like almost a half an hour for my heart rate to go down. Like, mm-hmm. things happen, and I'm pretty sure I would not have been able to tell the story about what was going on as clearly as I can tell it to you now.
Right.
So, yeah, let that adrenaline come down. Get to your attorney, and your attorney knows what to do to take care of you. If he's a good attorney. I mean, you can get some bum who probably doesn't know what he's doing, but get a good attorney, let them take care of you. They will handle the process. You don't need to talk to the cops if you're not ready to.
So I hear this one a lot. Do you have to rack your shotgun before you to let them know? I guess, is that like kind of, you know, enough information of warning them that, you know, hey, that's a shotgun, right? Like that sound, like, you know, because you have to give them warning or whatever to get out. Is that enough? You know,
so a lot of self-defense cases are really, you know, fact pattern dependent. You know, if I rack my shotgun and this guy comes running up the stairs, like, you know, I'm pretty sure racking a shotgun should have been enough. Does a jury agree with me? I don't know. I'm sure there might be a case out there that says my warning was racking my shotgun. Mm-hmm. I haven't found it yet, but there might be a case out there. A lot of it will be fact pattern dependent. I mean, if you rack a shotgun and I'm in your house, I'm getting out because I know what that sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, me too. But I'll be right behind you.
That's the reasonable standard, right? If a hunter racking a shotgun is going to say everybody in the world knows what a racking of a shotgun sounds like. The 17-year-old kid who broke in because you brought that new PS5 and you left the box out of the garbage, he may not know what a shotgun sounds like. You know, I mean, again, it's fact pattern dependent. A lot of this is going to be fact pattern dependent and mm-hmm. how the prosecution and the defense frame the cases and present it to the jury.
Okay. One of the things I get is, how do I prove that the person was there to hurt me? Or do I have to infer his intention or their intention to hurt me? Or is it kind of they have to prove that they weren't there to hurt me?
Well, that's kind of the problem is that a lot of times, especially if you're in a deadly force home invasion, they don't get to prove anything at that point because they're dead.
Right.
If someone enters your home, that's naturally a violent act. And again, that's going into the circumstances. If I was your attorney and you use deadly force against somebody, I would paint that picture as the most violent act possible of that person entering the home and having nothing but bad intentions on their mind. You know, this guy entered a well-known police officer's home in the community. This guy was looking for this, and this intruder didn't heed the warning to vacate the premises. Mm-hmm. Like, clearly the intruder meant physical bodily harm beyond whatever crime he was going to commit. Excellent. That's how I probably try to paint that to the jury. Me, you know, I am an attorney. I am weapons qualified and trained through the military. You enter my home, I'm going to infer you mean violence. You know, I'm going to stand at the top of my stairs and wait for you to try to make that action at me. But that's just the plan I've developed in my head of how I would address that situation.
Yeah. You and I are very similar because I'm kind of similar. And that's the way I train my clients is if you can yell, stay back, I have a gun.
Yeah.
While somebody else is on the phone with 911.
Right.
Right. Because that 911 is recording.
It's recording.
That phone call. And for you, that's a gold mine, right? Yep. As an attorney, and I get that tape. And hear my client yelling, stay back, I have a gun. Then I hear the door get kicked in. Then I hear pop, 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 gunshots. Mm-hmm. That's goldmine, right?
Yeah. And also, like, you know, again, evidence. Where are the gunshots going? You know, mm-hmm. was every gunshot hitting the front door? Or was every gunshot going, you know, trying to go around the intruder? Like, what was going on here? Were you just firing, you know, you know, my six shooters trying to scare him off? What? You know, the totality of the circumstances.
Yosemite again. Sam is you're thinking of, right?
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah, I'm a little better than Yosemite Sam. I think we both are a little better
than
Yosemite Sam. All right, so I want to sum this up. I had another criminal defense attorney on my TV show, and we're kind of talking about the same thing. And one piece of advice that he gave is, if you're going to get a firearm to protect your family from harm, one, train mm-hmm. with it. And number two, maybe go have a discussion with an attorney and have one. Yeah. So you are not looking through Google at 2 o'clock in the morning when you're nervous trying to find one. Mm-hmm. You already know that I can call this person. He or one of his associates is going to immediately come, or at least worst case scenario, be on speakerphone.
Yeah. Right,
while I'm talking to the police.
Absolutely. The best thing you could do is have an attorney. I remember when I passed the bar, Sicali immediately put me on his phone and was like, "Got another one." I think he might have been the third text I had said I passed the bar, and he, you know, but that is excellent advice. I wholeheartedly agree with that. One, train with a firearm. The last thing you want is the first time you use it is under those circumstances. You know, we did active shooter training in Afghanistan, and they simulated a lot of like high stress type environments. And I'll tell you what, the bullets weren't going quite as straight when our heart rate was up and it was negative 12 degrees in the mountains of Afghanistan. Similarly, the first time you handle your firearm is not when someone's running up the stairs to try to hurt you and your family.
Right, right.
And two, as much as you, if you don't have the time to go talk to an attorney, you can Google New Jersey self-defense laws, and a lot of criminal defense attorneys will quite literally lay the elements out for you on their webpage.
Okay.
And then there'll be something that says, hey, put us on here, or put us on there, or save our phone number, etc. Every criminal defense attorney in New Jersey would probably love to get a phone call in the middle of the night and be like, I got another client. Those are definitely great advice. And have a plan. Like, I've quite literally, I know this might sound a little neurotic and crazy, but I've quite literally developed a mental plan in my head of, I get the wife to a different room where our children are. That is the safe space between me and what I think is going to be the aggressor. Mm-hmm. And I've already decided at what avenues of approach I want to address this individual if they come at me. So I've developed a plan. I'm already an attorney, so I know what I can and cannot say. But go find your own attorney and train with your firearm.
All right.
I mean, those are probably the best advice. And learn the elements. Learn what if you're going to have that plan of using your firearm. Learn the elements, because this is an affirmative defense. You, as a defendant, have to prove the elements.
So it doesn't just end when the trigger, when the gun smoke clears. That's kind of just the beginning, right?
It's just the beginning. If you have an overzealous prosecutor that wants to try to make a point of you, New Jersey's not exactly the most gun-friendly state in America, so you might find one of those in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they may want to make an example of you. Maybe they don't. I don't know. Maybe it does end there and says, hey, you know, terrible situation. You know, get the crime scene cleaned up and evidence. And we're not going to charge you. But if they decide to charge you, yeah, you need to know your elements. You need a good criminal defense attorney, and you need to prove all of those elements, so that if you fail to prove one of the three elements in self-defense, you are likely not going to have a valid self-defense claim. This isn't an if and or but. This is a all three need to be there, or you're likely not going to have a good self-defense claim, and you're going to be liable.
That's important to know. So that's, see, now I just learned something. That's important to know. But you need to have all of those elements definitely proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
Absolutely.
And part of that is pre-planning, right? Mm-hmm. Having these discussions, listening to podcasts like this, reaching out to Anthony, myself, and we can put you in contact. And, you know,
you want to drop your email your website?
Please. Yeah. So, again, my name is Brandon Foster, licensed attorney in the state of New Jersey. My email is b.foster@fosterlawllc.com. And that's the best way to get a hold of me.
And that's the website, I'm guessing, fosterllc.com, correct?
Fosterlawllc.com.
There we go. So, yeah, guys, check them out for sure. And if you have any questions, feel free to hit them up.
So. Indeed. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you wanted to make clear to people out there?
Again, if you're claiming self-defense, you cannot be the aggressor. That is a key part. Because you see all these wonderful TikTok and YouTube videos, like Anthony said, a bunch of dudes just squaring up in the street. If you've had the opportunity to get away and get to safety, you cannot re-engage. Self-defense is an immediate threat upon you that you have to address right then and there.
Excellent. Yeah, I couldn't put it any better myself. So, again, that's our podcast for today, safetyman.co. What I want you to do is play this for your friends who just bought guns. I know a lot of you have, because I'm training people every week. And make sure you know the elements of self-defense. Train them, have a plan, talk it over with everybody in your home, have a plan B, and then keep yourself safe. Be ready.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you on the next one.